It's Wednesday, March the 17th, and we are in Yechezkel. This will be our last year until after Pesach. And we are up to the beginning of Perek Mem Dalet. That's chapter 44. And tonight the goal is going to be to get, I hope, through the first 16 psukim. So Yechezkel starts by Yashev Osi Derech Shar Hamikdash Hachitzon, and he returned me through the gate of the outer, the gate of the Mikdash, the outer one. Hapone Kadim, the face is east. Vuhu Sagur, and it was closed. Now we're going to have a difference of opinion of what exactly, which gate is he talking about. But let's read a little further. Vayomer, now he returned me, meaning, of course, the angel that's been leading him around, right? Vayomer Eli, and he said to me, Vayomer Eli Hashem, and Hashem said to me, Hashar Hazeh, this gate, Sogur Yehiyah, will be closed. Lo Yipaseach, it shall not be opened. Ve'ish lo Yavovo, no man will enter into it. Ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael Bavo, for Hashem, the God of Israel, will come through it. Ve'hoyah Sogur, and it will be closed. So it sounds like the gate is designated for Hashem. Of course, we know that Hashem doesn't need a gate, doesn't have a body, doesn't have any, but it's going to symbolically represent the gate of Hashem, and it's not for people. But then the next pasuk, Gimel, Es HaNasi, the prince, the Nasi, we're not going to say who that is yet, but it's something, some important figure, Nasi Hu, he's a prince, Yeshev bo le'echol lechem lifnei Hashem. He will sit in that gate to eat bread in front of Hashem. Miderech ulam hasha'ar yavo, from the way of the entrance way of the gate, the hall of the gate, he will come in. Umidarko yetzei, and from that same way he will go out. Okay. So let's understand different ways of explaining these three psukim. Rashi has a very specific explanation, and this is based on Rashi's explanation is based on a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Maseches Midos that the second Beis HaMikdash had a particular gate that was always closed, that wasn't opened up. And it was based on these psukim here in Yechezkel, because they modeled the second Beis HaMikdash, even though it wasn't fully based on what Yechezkel says over here. As we know, there are many differences between the second Beis HaMikdash and the third Beis HaMikdash, but in this regard, they modeled it after the third Beis HaMikdash, and there was a gate that was never opened, that was left closed because of these psukim, that's Hashem's gate, whatever that means. Do you have the second Beis HaMikdash picture?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
When did Yechezkel live, Rabbi?
He lived towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash and then during the Babylonian exile. This is during the exile.
How many years did he live?
How long did he live? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his age was. So, if we'll look... truth is that there isn't really a clear picture in here either. Okay, they don't really have it here. So we're not going to use the picture because it's not going to help us here either. It's neither, the gate that Rashi says it is neither on our big picture, nor is it in the second Beis HaMikdash picture that we have over there. But let's look at it anyway. We have, of course, the model of the third Beis HaMikdash here. And you've got the Chatzar HaChitzona, the outer courtyard, which has, of course, three entrances, south, north, and east. Then we have the Chatzar HaPnimi, the inner courtyard, which has three entrances also, the south, the east, and the north. North, east, and south. And then we have, on the west side of the inner courtyard, you have the entranceway to the first, the Ulam, which is the area the entrance area to the Beis HaMikdash itself. And then finally, you have the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the sanctuary. Rashi understands that although it says in Pasuk Aleph, it says, Shar HaMikdash HaChitzon, the gate of the Mikdash, the outer one, HaChitzon, he does not understand it to mean the outer gates of the Beis HaMikdash, of the entire complex. He understands it to mean the outer gate of the sanctuary, which would be here. That's the gate into the sanctuary. Now, we already learned that the sanctuary has a main entranceway, but there's also, and this is depicted, on the north side, there is a small entranceway, which is used to gain entry when the door is locked into the Beis HaMikdash itself. And we learned that the Kohen with the keys would unlock this door and head through the small chamber here, make a left, and come in from the other side and open up the doors from the inside. This little entranceway here on the right is not really written anywhere in the Psukim. Rabbi Eisman included it in his drawing because he followed the system that was in the second Beis HaMikdash, where there was a system like this, where the coin would enter through a small entranceway on the northern side, which would take him into the first chamber and then through to the Beis HaMikdash itself. He has some sukkim to allude to this, but it's not really explained as clearly as he draws it here. Rashi understands that there is another small entranceway on the left side, which would be the southern side of the main entranceway. Right here, where this block is over here, there would be an entranceway, a small one, that would go right through into the Beis HaMikdash. A very small entranceway. Small meaning relative to the other ones. The other ones, which were very, very large entranceways, these would be normal size, what we would call a normal size door and hall leading into the Beis HaMikdash. And it was on the left side, on the southern side going into the Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi understands that this is the door in question, that Yechezkel was taken to that door, and Hashem says to him that this door is going to remain closed. It's not to be opened. Because that's the gate that Hashem enters through. Whatever that means, that Hashem enters through that gate, but obviously it's a small gate, not the main entranceway, which would imply humility to use a small gate. And that's his way of going through. However, the Nasi will use that area to eat bread. Now, bread, it doesn't have to mean only bread. We know that the Torah and the Navi uses the word bread when to mean a meal. So, if we're going to use Rashi's explanation that that's what this means over here, then we have to understand who is the Nasi. Who is this prince? Now, it's very difficult to say that the Nasi means the king. What's the problem with saying the Nasi means the king? Okay, well, besides the fact it doesn't say the king, the Torah uses the word Nasi to mean king sometimes. Okay, because this area is off limits to non-Kohanim. Ostensibly. It's at least based on the second Beis HaMikdash and the first Beis HaMikdash, this area would be inaccessible for a non-Kohen. You'd have to be a Kohen to be able to go anywhere near this area. So, if we're saying the Nasi is going to go here and eat there, then we have to conclude, and Rashi does say this, that it's the Kohen Gadol. When it says Nasi, it doesn't mean the king, it means the Kohen Gadol. That's what it means. And, as Rashi explains, since it is not appropriate for someone of the stature of the Kohen Gadol to eat with everybody else in a public way, therefore he's given a special place that he will go to eat. It'll be in this entranceway here, which is, so to speak, Hashem's gate. And it is there that the Kohen Gadol will sit and eat the meat that he has to eat, the bread that he has to eat, whatever he has to eat that day, karbanos, etc. and he can enter through that gate, and also he will exit through the same gate if he so chooses. That's the way Rashi explains it. Now there is a difficulty with this, which is that in Pasuk Gimel, in verse 3, it says, the Nasi, who he's the prince, Yeshev bo le'echol lechem lifnei Hashem, he'll sit there to eat bread in front of Hashem. The difficulty is, can anyone tell me the difficulty? With the word Yeshev, he will sit. The rule,
you're not supposed to sit.
You're not allowed to sit. No one is allowed to sit in the Beis HaMikdash complex. No one is allowed to sit except for only one person.
The king.
The king. And only the king from Malchus Beis David. Only from David HaMelech. This was in fact a big problem for Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the one, he was a great person at one time, and he's the one who was told by the Navi, Achia HaShiloni, that he was to secede from the Shlomo HaMelech's son, from Rechavam, and create a second country of Yisrael, where the southern kingdom would be Yehuda, would be the kings of David HaMelech with the Beis HaMikdash. The northern kingdom would be that of the Malchei Yisrael, the kings of Yisrael. That would be Yeravam ben Nevat. He was the first of the Malchei Yisrael. And when he seceded, he was a tzaddik, but he ended up becoming corrupt because he was constantly in fear of losing the kingdom back to the line of David HaMelech. One of his concerns was that if people will be Ola Regel, people will go up during the Shalosh Regalim, during the three holidays to the Beis HaMikdash, they will go there, and they will enter the Beis HaMikdash, and everybody has to stand, and the only one who's allowed to sit is the king, who's a descendant of David HaMelech. But Yeravam ben Nevat, who is not a descendant of David HaMelech, would not be allowed to sit, and it would be very clear who is the real king, and who is an imposter. And it will therefore diminish his stature. So Yeravam ben Nevat was unwilling to have people be Ola Regel. He took steps to keep the northern kingdom from going to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year for this reason. So this is a very significant halacha that only the king and only Malchus Beis David is allowed to sit in the Beis HaMikdash complex. So to say that this means the Kohen Gadol, who's going to eat bread in this area, and use the word to sit, that's a difficult usage of words. Now, it doesn't have to mean to literally sit down. I suppose that Rashi's going to have to learn, he doesn't address this, I suppose he's going to have to learn, it doesn't actually mean to sit, it means to dwell there to eat. It doesn't actually mean to sit down. I'll have to stand, but When you talk about eating, you talk about sitting, because that's the way it means to be settled there, to be kavua, to be in one place. Because you don't walk around eating, you're going to eat in one place, so that's what he would eat. When I say Beis HaMikdash complex, by the way, I don't mean the parts that aren't sanctified. The parts that aren't sanctified, of course, one could sit. I'm not sure in the third Beis HaMikdash where that line of demarcation is going to be. But certainly, it's not, the line of demarcation is not going to be here. I mean, right over here, going into the main sanctuary, I would imagine that's going to be one of the areas that you cannot sit. So that's a difficulty in Rashi's explanation, but that's the way that he explains these psukim. Yes?
A couple of things. One thing is, I'm just chuckling to myself, because, you know, we know about this not sitting. So what I hear you saying, he's not
going to
be sitting. He's kind of
going to
be sitting, but maybe he's sitting.
Right.
Yeah, we'll get, you know, like we have to kind of walk around.
Right, that's the difficulty. That is one of the difficulties.
But the other thing I really wanted to ask you is, when Yom Kippur comes, the Kohen Gadol goes through the main doorway?
Yeah, I imagine he goes through the main. There's no reason for him not to.
That's a big doorway.
Yeah.
And he goes through it.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that, why... I forgot. Why can't the other people go through it? Because only the Kohen Gadol can go through it?
Go through which?
Through the big main
one. No, they all go through the main one. Anybody who goes in goes through the main one. he goes through a side entrance. There is a side entrance which is designated as Hashem's entrance that he's allowed. He goes there to eat his bread.
I think I understand that. I'm saying for other times besides the Yom Kippur.
Anybody who has to go in here goes through the main entrance.
So why did we need that little doorway?
To unlock the doors. That's just in the morning to unlock the doors.
And why did we need to unlock the door from the inside?
That's the way it's set up. I don't know the answer. That's the way it's set up.
So yeah. The Kohanim who ate like all the Korbanos, they...
So we said before that they ate in the chambers.
Okay, so they could sit because I came in and they're all standing.
I imagine so. Although I'm not 100% sure, but I imagine so.
It's more proper to sit.
Yes, you're supposed to sit when you eat. That is true. We'll talk about that. We'll digress into that in a moment. Let's just first get clear where we're talking about. That's the way Rashi understands it. Others disagree with Rashi, using the word chitzon in the first pasuk, the outer gate. Outer gate towards the east sounds like the outer gate towards the east. And that this is the gate that we're talking about. One of these, the gate over here, which is the eastern outer entrance into the Beis HaMikdash. They understand that when it says that it was closed, Yechezkel now comes to this doorway, which remember, he had entered through this doorway originally. Now he comes to this doorway and it is closed. And then, going on, the Pasuk tells us, that Hashem tells him, this gate will be closed, it will not be opened. No man will come into it. For, now here's the big difference, not the way I translated before. For Hashem, the God of Israel, will enter through it. Rather, for Hashem, the God of Israel, entered through it. Past tense. Because since Yechezkel witnessed the re-entry of Hashem into his sanctuary, coming through this gate, therefore, that gate is now closed. And the way Rabbi Eisman says it is to symbolize that Hashem is not leaving again. Where in the past, he entered the sanctuary, but then he left with the destruction. The third Beis HaMikdash is eternal, and it will never be destroyed. So his entrance through here, the gates close shut, as if to say, Hashem is locked in. He's not leaving again. And then, when it says that the Nasi will go there to eat his bread, it doesn't mean the Nasi will go through it, which is the way she understands that the Nasi will go through this gate. Rather, the Nasi will come here and eat his bread in this area near the closed gate, which symbolizes that Hashem will never leave the Beis HaMikdash. Learning this way, one can understand the Nasi means the king. And he will go here and he will sit, because the king is allowed to sit, and he will sit and he will eat his bread in this area. Rabbi Eisman suggests that it is to underscore the king's responsibility to make sure that the people do not sin, which would, God forbid, cause the Shekhinah, Hashem's divine presence, to leave the Beis HaMikdash. So he sits there to have that message that it's his job to make sure the Beis HaMikdash is eternal and Hashem never leaves. Those are the two explanations that we have in how to understand these psukim. This will come up again in a later chapter. So we have to keep this in mind. Later on, we'll be touching on this again. Yes?
I don't remember when Yechezkel saw Hashem. How did he see Hashem? That wasn't there for was that described?
It's described as well as we can understand it. The chariot.
The chariot was fire?
Yeah, whatever that means.
I missed that part.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. The gate.
It was described again, more recently.
Are you saying the gate would be closed then afterward? Would really be closed?
Yeah, no one could use that gate. They'd have to go through the north or the south entrance ways, according to this. According to this, the only ways in would be north and south, not from the east. Mm-hmm. That would be the way to understand this one. Now, I do want to touch on the point about eating, and this is a significant hashkafa to be aware of. The Gemara tells us, the Mishnayos tell us, that here we're saying, before we get to the Mishnayos, here we're saying, according to Rashi, that the Kohen Gadol would eat in that small entrance way because he shouldn't be sitting with everybody else and eating. It's not proper for someone of his stature to be eating with everybody else. The Mishnah tells us that one of the characteristics that defines a Talmud Chacham is that he doesn't eat with those who are not Talmidei Chachamim. He doesn't just eat with everybody else. He's not found in that type of social setting with everybody else. So what is the point that is being made here with that Mishnah and also with these psukim over here according to Rashi? Eating is a very social thing. We eat. It's a very human thing. Everybody has to eat. It is demeaning for someone of stature to eat with people who are not of the same stature. When I say stature, I'm not talking about putting on airs. I'm talking about stature of their closeness to Hashem. It is a demeaning thing to eat with others who are not of the same stature. There are ways to eat and ways not to eat. And the more refined a person is, the more it is reflected in how they eat. One thing the Gemara says is that one should not walk around eating outside. That walking around eating outside is like, the Gemara compares it to a dog, to walk around eating outside, to eat in a shuk, to go eat in a marketplace. We don't do that. We don't walk around eating. It's a demeaning thing. It's animalistic. That's not a human way to eat. We, when we're ready to eat, we sit down and we eat in privacy. The whole notion of eating in a public place where others are not eating, it is an unrefined thing to do. All these cafes, these outdoor places, I pass by and see people, you know, non-Jews sitting there eating. To me, it's so
European.
What's that?
European.
Well, I'm not going to use. It's not a nice thing. When we eat in a group, like at a wedding or at a dinner, so you're sitting in a large hall, but everybody's eating. So everybody's sitting and eating. Everybody's doing the same thing. But to be sitting and eating while everybody else is walking around, it's a demeaning thing. It's not a refined thing to do. It's like a public display of eating, and that's not a refined thing to do. We certainly don't believe in walking around and eating. One should be sitting down to eat, and one should be in a relatively private place, meaning in a place that is for eating. So eating in a restaurant, everybody else is eating in the restaurant. That's a place for, it's designated for eating. Eating there in the middle of a mall or eating there in the middle of a sidewalk, it just, to me, it's just so, I don't think that that is in keeping with what a Torah hashkafa of eating is. Here we're being told that the Kohen Gadol should not be, or the king should not be eating with everybody else in that way. The way the Gemara says it is that a Talmud Chacham will know who he's going to eat with before he sits down to eat, rather than just sitting with anybody. That's because in an eating setting, people will eat in their unrefined ways, whether that is reflected in the manner that they eat their food, which could be very unrefined, as we know, or in what they talk about at the table while they're eating. Either way, that's a demeaning thing for a Talmud Chacham to be a part of. Whether the subject matter that people talk about is one that is inappropriate, or if it's Lashon Hara, or those sorts of things. So that what I'm just pointing out is that in America, in the Western civilization in general, eating is such it's become something which is so, it's not just social, it's so public, it's so out there. There's so many places to eat. If your person's not keeping kosher, there's so many places to eat, so many choices, and there's food everywhere we go. It's such an affluent society that we live in. There's food everywhere. The days of our ancestors in Europe, where they could barely find enough bread to feed their family, are a thing of the past. Baruch Hashem, we live in such incredible affluence, and there's food everywhere. And you see people eating in every which way. When I sit on a plane or on a train, so I'm sitting in my seat, I always feel very, very uncomfortable eating. If I haven't eaten, I'm going to have a meal there. Very, very uncomfortable. Unless everybody else is eating, if everybody's being served a meal, okay, so then I'm doing the same things everybody else is doing. But for me to be eating in my seat while everybody else on the train or the plane, they're not eating, it's a really strange feel. Like, what kind of, right? But most people don't think twice about it. Because it's eating. Like, what's the big deal? Or you walk around and people are sitting there, people buy things and they just eat them, and they, you know, they're walking around. Go through an airport and watch people just, you know, they're just walking around with food and, you know, and they're drinking and eating. Drinking is not exactly the same thing. But it's just not a nice thing. So I'm just bringing that out to raise our sensitivity and awareness of what eating is meant to be from the perspective of our Talmid Chachamim. Yeah.
So I'm thinking of either at Kiddush, where you see people walking and eating, so we really should be sitting down and not walking and eating, or like the cocktail hour or the wedding or something like that, where there's no place to sit, we shouldn't eat.
Okay,
so that's one. Yeah. The other, I mean,
the costume.
And Talmid Chachamim, who won't eat with anyone who's not, so then does that exclude eating with kiruv type situations and things? And what about the rabbis' tishes, where they have these rabbis and everyone, all the men are invited to be there, right? Well, to watch the rabbi eat, but he invites everyone, and not everyone's going to be at his level. Like, I'm finding difficulty.
Okay, good.
I mean, they pass all the food up to the men, and then the women watch the men eat, and they don't eat anything. That's a whole nother level.
Okay, I've never been to a rabbi's tish. I can't tell you
how that works. Where they sit down. Okay, they are not refined, these people.
Okay. So let me address these points. You bring up very good points. Let's start with a kiddush or a cocktail hour. So there, it's not the same thing I'm talking about, because there everybody is eating. Everybody's doing the same thing. Now the question of standing or sitting, it's true that it is kind of funny standing up and eating. And if I ever go to a kiddush, if I ever eat at a kiddush, I don't always eat at the kiddush, but if I eat at the kiddush or at a cocktail hour, I always sit down. I always find a place to sit and sit down. At the Kol event this past Sunday, and I made sure to sit down before I wouldn't eat standing up. Because I find it to be very, very unrefined to be standing around eating. But people, if everybody else is doing it, it's not exactly what I'm talking about over here. I'm talking about one person walking around eating and everybody else is doing other things. It's not an eating setting. You're describing a setting which is meant for eating.
But it's just that there aren't enough to sit down.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad to stand. You know, that's too harsh. I'm just saying that I think it is more refined to sit down. Now, the truth is, for the bracha achrona, to make an al hamichya, for a mezonos, you can make one standing up, but for an al hamichya, you're supposed to be seated, which is a problem. That's why in the kiddush and the kolal, I instituted that kiddush be recited sitting down, even though my personal minhag is to stand for kiddush. And Rabbi Feldman stands for Kiddush. But in the Kolo Kiddush downstairs, when it started a couple of years ago, I specifically instituted that it be a sit-down thing, even though there's not that much room, everybody has to crowd their chairs in there, because I didn't want it to be this thing where everybody's standing, and because for the bracha, you're supposed to be sitting down for bracha achrona, for al hamichya. So that's a technical point. There are seats in the big Kiddush. There's just not enough for everybody, but...
No, it's everyone. Yeah.
But there's enough for everybody who wants to. And that there is. If more people wanted to, there would be more seats. But it's not the case. Most people don't want to sit.
You can sit down just for the Al-Mikhya.
You can do that. Yeah. You can do that. Yeah, you can sit down for the Al-Mikhya. So those are the cocktail hours and weddings. But the same thing with weddings. I'm very uncomfortable with the standing up.
And, stuff.
No, I always try to sit down. Now, that was when you mentioned three things. That and the tish, right? That was the next thing you mentioned?
Well, the tish and Yeshiva boys.
And the Yeshiva boys, okay.
Yeshiva so men,
I'll get to that.
Not exactly the most refined.
Yeah, I'll get to that. So the tish, which, again, I've never been to one, but my understanding over there is the idea is that the Rebbe eating is a holy experience. That when he eats, he's eating in a different way entirely. That he's not eating for the sake of the food. It's not because he has a taiva, a desire to eat, but he's eating because of the serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and making a bracha and like that, and witnessing that elevates everybody around them. That's the way I understand what's going on over there, but I don't know for sure.
But when he's sitting down, he doesn't know who he's sitting with.
Well, no one
could be anybody.
No one else is eating, and they're all there to see him.
Does he pass out the shirayim or something?
Yeah, they give right. They give out. That's little bits. But they're there to watch him. We assume that nobody's going to go there and start talking sports or lashon hara.
Right. Open their own pack of peanuts and eat at the same time.
Right, you would assume. Right. Okay. Now with the yeshiva bakrim, so yeshiva bakrim are young, are teenagers or, I mean they're teenagers, that's what they are. So teenagers are, they eat the way that they have unfortunately been accustomed to eating. And much of the time they have not yet learned their manners, which is true. And that is something which, as a bachur grows older, there's an expectation that they would become more and more refined. That is true. But unfortunately, you're right, that in a typical yeshiva dining room, you're not going to find... No one's going to put a napkin on their laps. Right?
I'll keep their elbows off the mizbeah.
Right, okay. All right. Right. Yeah.
And what about the kiruv issue? Eating, have lunch and learn.
Right, so again, the point over there is that they know who they're going to be seated with, rather than it be potluck. And it's, again, when there's a kiruv situation, they're coming to hear the class. That's why they're there. They're coming to interact with the rabbi. So the assumption is that they're going to act in a little bit of more of a refined manner than they normally would. I imagine that at a lunch and learn, that the conversation that goes on is not the same as they would with their coworkers, you know, sitting around and just schmoozing. That's the hope anyway. If it deteriorates beyond that, you know, if it devolves to that type of conversation, then the lunch of the rabbi shouldn't be.
So,
are
you supposed to tell the rabbi who's going to be seated at his table so he knows who he's going to
be seated? No, I don't know if it has to be that. Usually you see people at a wedding with their friends. I mean, that's the most typical thing that happens, right? I mean, you know. So you don't have to tell them beforehand.
I purposely, when I'm doing dinner, spread the rabbis out because I figure that's a better kiruv thing.
Right.
To have the rabbis together and put Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think that's
it. Is that wrong?
No, I don't think it's wrong. I think that's you're doing it for the right purpose. And again, nobody at the table is going to talk in a way or act in a way that is unbecoming in those types of settings.
But they might not be modestly dressed all the time.
That is an issue. That is an issue. But that's an issue with these dinners, no matter where a person sits. And that's always the case with these things. So everybody has to deal with that in the way they deal with it. But that's an issue. This is talking more about, there's an open table and just plopping down, and then other people just, and it becomes this, you're just sitting with anybody. You don't know who's refined.
Like the lunchroom bench where people.
That kind of thing, right? That kind of idea. You could have anything, and you could be the minority sitting there at the table. It doesn't have to apply to rabbis. Anyone in this room, you could sit down in a setting like that, and then other people come and they're talking about all kinds of things that should never be spoken about, and you're sitting there, and it's demeaning. It's demeaning to be sitting there with them while they're having these types of conversations. So, or food fights, but right. Now the flip side of this is that eating with somebody is considered to be a close thing to do. Eating with another person is considered to be a way of being close together. That's the reason for this issue is because there's an assumed closeness with eating together. This is why at a wedding, when the chasan and kala go to the yichud room, where they're in seclusion for the first time, the way the halacha says it in Shulchan Aruch is not just they should go to a room for seclusion. The purpose of the seclusion is that they should be alone, because that solidifies the marriage. That's fine. But the way it says it in Shulchan Aruch is they go to a secluded room and eat together. That's the way it says it. Because the act of eating with another person or people is an act of closeness. And that's why when you're sitting at a table with people who you would be demeaned if you were close to them, when you're eating with them, that is inherently an act of closeness. It's considered an act of closeness when people eat together. And that's why in the Yichud room, the Chasan and Kala eat. It's not just because they've been fasting. Even if they haven't been fasting, like for those who get married on Rosh Chodesh or on Hanukkah, where they don't have to fast, nevertheless, they eat in the Yichud room because that is considered to be a closeness. Similarly, in the halachos of Taras HaMashpacha, family purity, where there are restrictions when a woman is prohibited to her husband, there are restrictions that involve their entire lives. Many of the restrictions, in fact, the bulk of the restrictions surround eating. That's where there are a lot of restrictions about the serving and about eating from the same plate and bath. All that is very centered around eating. That's where it really comes up. That's where a husband and wife really have to think about what they're doing is at a meal. And that's for the same reason, because eating creates a closeness. And so when a husband and wife have to be separated, it's important that there be restrictions at the meal. That's where there has to be an important restriction. So this is all this coming from the same place, that eating together is a sense of closeness. It creates a sense of closeness, it's an inherent sense of closeness, and we should be sensitive to that notion. But you can still see people wherever you wish.
They're never eating with their families, right? The whole time that they're serving those 2 weeks.
That's right. During those 2 weeks.
They're eating with the other Kohanim, but they're not eating with their family.
Right. It depends what they're eating. It depends which types of sacrifices. If they're eating kadshe kadshim, which are the holiest ones, then only they can eat it. If they're eating kadshim kalim, which are the less sanctified ones, they can eat it with their families. It depends on what has to be eaten and when.
I thought it couldn't leave the area.
Right. Well, their families could theoretically be there and eat with them, depending on what they're eating.
Where's there?
The Beis HaMikdash area.
Like the chamber?
Well, I'm not sure in the third Beis HaMikdash where it would be. The chambers were for the Kadshei Kadshim.
So it's not there.
Right.
So it would be the outer courtyard?
I'm not sure. It would be even the outer courtyard, but I think it's even beyond the walls that we have up here on the...
But then it's outside, isn't it?
Well, you see, in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kadshim Kalim could be
in the area.
Yeah, in the entire area, and even in Yerushalayim itself.
So they had tables and chairs set up out there?
You could eat it in all of Yerushalayim.
Oh.
All of the old city.
Okay.
Right.
Oh,
so okay. Like the carbon...
You could have gone home to your apartment.
Right. Like, for instance, the carbon Pesach is Kadshim Kalim. Mm. You can't eat it out of Yerushalayim, but you could eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim, in the old city. That's where they would eat the Karban Pesach. Let us continue with Pasuk Dalet. I think my goal is a little ambitious for tonight, but let's go on. Pasuk Dalet. Verse 4. Vayevieni derech shar hatzafon el pnei habayis. So he brought me through the northern gate to the face of the house. The face of the house is the front of it, but he brought me through the northern gate. Va'er, and I saw v'nei malech v'od Hashem es beis Hashem, and the honor of Hashem filled the entire house of Hashem. Va'er pol el panai, and I fell on my face. Rabbi Eisman quotes Rav Breuer, I believe, who says over here, why the northern gate? Because way back when, a couple years ago, when we in the beginning of Yechezkel, he came to the Beis HaMikdash in a nevuah, in a prophecy. He didn't actually go there, but he was brought there in a prophecy in the second Beis HaMikdash prior to its destruction, where he witnessed all kinds of idolatry being worshipped. And that happened coming from the northern gate. So here he comes to the northern gate and sees the opposite. He sees the honor of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash.
Do you know what that means?
No. From here on in, we are going to get, Hashem is going to speak to Yechezkel about the Kohanim themselves. We've discussed the construction of the Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach, but now we're going to have a rather lengthy talk about the Kohanim themselves. Which Kohanim are fit to serve, which Kohanim are not fit to serve, and what are the restrictions and rules of the Kohanim when they serve. That's going to go on for the balance of Perek Mem Daled of chapter 44. Right, for the balance of Perek Mem Daled. So we're going to talk about it tonight, and we'll also it'll carry over to at least the next shir as well. Vayomer Eli Hashem. And Hashem said to me, Ben Adam, son of man, sim libecha put your heart, ure'ei ve'inecha, and see with your eyes, uva'aznecha, shema, and listen with your ears, eis chalashani medaber osach, all that I speak to you, l'chol chukos beis Hashem, u'l'chol torosav, to all the statutes of the house of Hashem and all its laws. And you should put your heart to the entrance of the house, and all that has to do with the mikdash. Now we had a very similar pasuk in the beginning of the description of the third Beis HaMikdash. I'll tell you where it is. You don't have to turn back. I'll read it to you. But if you'd like to turn back, in the beginning of Perek Mem, in the beginning of the 40th chapter, and also, well, it's pasuk Dalet. The Malach here says to Yechezkel, "Vayidaber Elayha Ish." The man spoke to me, "Ben Adam, son of man, re'e ve'inecha, see with your eyes, uvaznecha shema, and listen with your ears, v'sim limcha, and put your heart, v'chol asherani mare osach, all that I show you." So here, this command to Yechezkel that he be very attentive to all of what he's being shown, that was about the construction of the third Beis HaMikdash. Here, Hashem is using the same phrases, but now regarding the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, now it's about the rules of the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously the rules of the Beis HaMikdash is the Kohen's domain. The Beis HaMikdash is the Kohen's place. It's the Kohen's domain, and the rules of the Beis HaMikdash are going to be the Kohen's rules. Bear in mind that Yechezkel is a Kohen. Keep that in mind. We all the way back in chapter 1, we saw that Yechezkel is a Kohen. So Hashem is not talking to a non-Kohen about Kohanim. He's talking to a Kohen about Kohanim.
Right. How do we understand that Hashem speaks to Moshe and Hashem speaks to Yechezkel? What's the difference?
The Gemara tells us that Moshe saw with a clear glass, right, and all the other prophets saw with a clouded glass.
We're talking about not hearing.
Yeah, well, it would be the same idea. Whatever it is, whatever a nevuah, a prophecy is a connection to Hashem.
Right.
That's what it is. So when Moshe got a prophecy, it was much closer to Hashem than all the other prophets. So whatever it is Yechezkel is being told or he's being shown, it is not with the same closeness to Hashem and therefore not with the same clarity. Now, as far as we're concerned, the words that we see are accurate. And the clarity that he had far exceeds our clarity. We're not going to understand any of this to the depth that he did. Nevertheless, whatever depth he understood it at was still paled in comparison to Moshe Rabbeinu's depth. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. V'amarta el meri el beis Yisrael, say to the rebellious ones to the house of Yisrael. Komar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God. Rav lachem mikol to'avos heichem beis Yisrael, it's enough for you, all of your iniquities, all your abominations, the house of Yisrael. Now what is he talking about? We're past the point in Yechezkel where he chastises and admonishes the Jewish people. So here, what is he referring to? Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. V'haviachem b'nei nechar arlei lev v'arlei vasar. When you bring foreigners, those whose hearts are covered and their flesh is covered, lios b'mikdashi, to be in my sanctuary, lechalalo es beis, to profane my house, v'akrivchem es lachmi, when you bring my bread, chelev v'adam, the fats and the blood, v'yafeiru es b'ris, and they nullified my covenant, el kol to'avoseichem, to all of your abominations. So what he's referring to is that when Kohanim, who should not be performing the service, do perform the service, it is a profaning of Hashem's name, and it's an abomination. And this is what Hashem is referring to, that in the past there were Kohanim who did not serve Hashem properly, meaning that there were Kohanim who should not have been serving in the Beis HaMikdash who did anyway. And here Yechezkel is going to be told which ones should not be serving. Now, so far there are two types that are mentioned: arle lev va'arle vasar, covered of heart and covered of flesh. And Arel is a derogatory term for someone, a man, who is not circumcised. And that would be Arle Vasar, covered of flesh, an uncircumcised male. Arle Lev, the covered of the heart, would be borrowing the same term, Arel, and it refers to one who commits idolatry, one who worships idols. And so, the Kohanim who worshipped idols, or the Kohanim who did not have a bris milah, they should not have been serving in the Beis HaMikdash. In the past, they had. Now, it should be understood that there are these categories are two different types of categories. The idolatry one is a sin of committing idolatry. The not being circumcised, the halacha is as follows. If there is, God forbid, a woman has a baby boy, and the boy is circumcised, and unfortunately that circumcision kills the baby, which is a rare thing to happen today, but you understand that it could have happened in the past. If that happens on more than one occasion, then if she has a third boy, then that boy should not be circumcised. Because although bris milah is a very, very important mitzvah, but it is not one that supersedes life. And if we see a pattern that her children don't live when they get a bris milah, then the next one should not get a bris milah, even though he would still be in the category of Arel. He would be uncircumcised. But that is more important than, God forbid, taking his life. And so the Arle Vasar, those who are uncircumcised of flesh, means those Kohanim who unfortunately had brothers who died from having a bris milah. Therefore, the halacha is that they should not get one, and that's perfectly fine. Nevertheless, they are disqualified from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not their fault. They didn't do anything to deserve that, but that's the way it is. It's no different than a Kohen who has a mum, who has a blemish. A Kohen who, God forbid, is missing a limb, missing an arm, missing a leg, even though they didn't do anything wrong, they're not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Here too, a Kohen who is uncircumcised is not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, even if it's not his fault that he's uncircumcised.
But they knew that, right?
They knew that, but there were Kohanim who did it anyway.
Because it was such a powerful occasion to be
yeah,
there?
People wanted to do it. They wanted
close to Hashem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds. It sounds like a contradiction. You want to be close to Hashem, so you do what He doesn't want you to do. Right. But we do this all the time. We do it all the time. We do it all the time. We want to be close to Hashem, so we have to, we must, you know, I have to kiss the Sefer Torah because it's important, so I push someone aside so I can get to the Sefer Torah. Right? You know, we do that all the time. We do it all the time. It becomes so fixated on what we have to do to serve Hashem that we do other things that are wrong.
Right?
It's a human thing. We do it all the time. All of us do it. So this unfortunately happened as well. And of course, those who served idols, even if they did teshuvah, but once they served idols, they are no longer qualified to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Even though the teshuvah may wipe away the sin, but it does not re-qualify them to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Once they worship idols, they become disqualified.
Did the Northern Kingdom, didn't they hire Kohanim to do the temple there that the guy had in his backyard? Right?
Yeah. So they became disqualified. That is what happened.
So disqualified means you can't enter the temple?
No, they can't serve. They can't perform the service in the Beis HaMikdash, which means to catch the blood and throw the blood and all that, you know, all those things that the Kohanim do.
But if you were a Kohen, okay, why would you not do it in the real Beis HaMikdash? Why would you go to the Northern Kingdom and do it there?
I mean, if they were hired, then that would be the reason. Or because they were drawn to it. Remember, idolatry was a very great desire in those days. It was not easy to avoid idolatry. It was a very, very tantalizing thing. Before the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men of the Great Assembly, took away our desire for it, it was very difficult to stay away from it. So let's cover a few more psukim before we run out of time. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. V'lo shemartem mishmeres kadoshai, you do not protect the protection of my sanctity. Vatesimun, and you put them, meaning you put those who are disqualified, l'shomrei mishmarti, to guard my uh, my my guardings, by mikdashi lachem, in my mikdash for you, which means you had them perform the service. Kamar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God. Kol ben nechar, all foreigners. Foreigners here means those who have turned away from Hashem. It doesn't mean foreigners, a non-Jew. It means those who have turned away from Hashem. Erel leiv verel basar, those who are covered of heart or covered of flesh. Lo yavo el mikdashi, shall not come to my mikdash. L'chol ben nechar asher b'soch ben Yisrael, to all the foreigners that are amongst the ben Yisrael. Kiim alevim asher rochaku me'olai, the levim. Now levim here means the kohanim, who are of course from Shevet Levi, that they distance themselves from me. Bisos Yisrael, when the Jews went astray, asher tou me'olai, they went astray from me. Acharei gilulehem, after their abominations. V'nasu avonam, they shall carry their sin. They could be in my mikdash. These people who sinned or who don't have a bris milah, they could be in my mikdash as servants. Pikudos el shari habayis, designated to the gates of the house. In other words, they can be gatekeepers. These kohanim are allowed to be gatekeepers. Umishar sim es habayis, and serving the house in that way. Hema yishchatu es haolav es hazevach lam, they can slaughter the sacrifices for the nation. They are allowed to do that. Vehema yamdul lifnehem l'shar sam, they can stand before them to serve them, but they cannot do the other types of service in the Beis HaMikdash. So the two things they can do is they can be gatekeepers, and which even Levium can do, and they can slaughter an animal, which even a Yisrael can do. Slaughtering the animal, anybody can do. So the Kohanim who became disqualified are allowed to do those things. Yana she yeshar su asam lifnei gilulehem, because they served in front of their abominations. Vayu leveis Yisrael mechshol avon, and they were for the Bnei Yisrael as a stumbling block, as a sin. Al kenasasi yadi aleim, therefore I swear, I raise my hand about them, which means I swear. Numa Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. Venasu avonam, they will carry their sin. Velo yigshu elai lechahin li, they will not come close to me to be kohanim for me. Velo geshes el kol kodashai, come close to all of my sanctity. El kodshei kodashim, to the holy of holies. Venasu klimasam, they will carry their shame. Veso avosam asher asu, and their abominations that they did. Venasati osam shomrei mishmeres habayis, and I will put them as those who guard the house, l'chol avodoso, l'chol asher ye'asebo, all its service, and all of that is done in it. So they become disqualified from the service in the Beis HaMikdash. The next pasuk, starting the next pasuk, begins the Haftorah for Parshas Emor. Emor, which is the parasha that talks about Kohanim, this is the Haftorah, the next one. And it begins like this. This is the contrast to the ones we just mentioned. The Hakohanim Alevim b'nei Tzadok. But the Kohanim who are Alevim from the children of Tzadok, remember we mentioned who Tzadok was, that he was the first Kohen Gadol under Shlomo HaMelech, and he's the one who was a great Tzadok, and all of the Kohanim are the ones who the line came back to him for being the Kohen Gadol. Asher Shamru es Mishmeres Mikdashi, that they did keep my guardings. Bisos bnei Yisrael me'olai, when the Jews went wayward from before me, that they did not go astray. Heima yikruv ve'olai l'sharseni, they will come close to me to serve me. V'amdu l'fanai, they'll stand before me. L'hakriv li chelev adam, to bring to me fats and blood. Nu'um Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God. Heima yavo el mikdashi, they will come to my mikdash. Veheima yikruvu el shulchani l'sharseni, they'll come close to my table to serve me. V'shamru es mishmarti, they will guard my guardings. So that's the contrast. The ones who went astray, they are no longer qualified to serve. The ones who remain steadfast to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in the worst times, they're the ones who will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then from here on in, from Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, to the end of the chapter, we're going to have some technical laws about Kohanim, and we'll have to cover that next time. One point I want to leave you off with is that it's interesting to note that a Kohen who becomes disqualified from being a Kohen because of a marriage that should not have been done, a Kohen marries a divorcee or something like that, that the child born from that marriage is not a Kohen in any way. The Kohen now becomes like a regular Yisrael. They don't have a status of a diminished Kohen. Their status is not a Kohen at all. Here Hashem is not saying that. Here he's saying they have a status of a diminished Kohen. they still can be gatekeepers, which is a Levi's job, but they still are able to do that. The difference is that with the case I just described before, where the Kohen loses all status of being a Kohen, you would not give him, not only you would not give him the first Aliyah, you wouldn't give him the second Aliyah either. First Aliyah goes to a Kohen, second Aliyah goes to a Levi, third Aliyah can go to anybody. The Kohen who is the product of a marriage that should not have happened for his father, that Kohen is like a Yisrael. He can't get the first Aliyah, but he also can't get the second Aliyah. He can only start with the third. The father himself, if he separates from the woman he's not supposed to be married to, can then go back to being a regular Kohen.
But if he does, if he's married, then he's not supposed to get.
That's yeah. But then he's literally living in sin. I mean, he shouldn't be that doing that. Right. That's already a problem.
He doesn't get any Aliyah.
I think it depends on the I think it depends on the situation itself. Is it deliberate? Is it, you know, what does he know? I think it's going to depend on that. But I'm not a shul rabbi, so I don't need to know that.
So. You say that the women guarded the gates?
No, the Levium. The Levies guarded the gates.
So the Kohen that were diminished and...
They were able to guard the gates.
So was it like, most people know who's the Kohen and who's not. Was that like, there's Joseph, who used to be...
They knew. There was a whole group of Kohanim. It wasn't just one person. There was a whole set of Kohanim in the second Beis HaMikdash who became disqualified for what they did during the exile.
Uh-huh.
They became disqualified.
So they then had to live with that shame?
Yeah. Yeah, they lived with that shame. Yeah.